Blog Talk Radio.
Son of a bitch! What's up, y'all? As I'm talking to you right now, I'm still finishing up prepping for the show. Because I roll to the last minute. That's what I do. Like 5 seconds before I came on air, the last clip I needed for the show finished rendering. So if it finished like directly after when it did, it would have been, the show would have started with you hearing a random clip of Rand Paul talking. But actually, that's early on in the show, too, so I'm going to get to that probably the second story that we do here. But I have a great show for you. A lot of substance in today's show. A lot of, later on in the show, I will be mocking the big three. I'll be mocking Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. We have all types of fundamentalist lunatics to talk about today. Right off the bat here, we're going to jump into Iraq. Some really interesting stuff coming out of there. Some more I told you so from everybody who was against the Iraq war to begin with. Then, like I said, we'll get to the Rand Paul thing. The New York Times and CBS News released a poll on the issue of corruption and money in politics. And it is a absolutely crushing victory for our mindset and for our policy ideas and proposals, the things that we talk about all the time. The overwhelming majority of the American people are basically with us. And I'll give you many, many specifics on that, and then obviously we'll discuss what we can do with those numbers. We have conservative commentator George Will talks about Bernie Sanders. That should be fun to discuss. Rush Limbaugh, yet again, exposing his pure partisan hackery with, I mean, the things that he chooses to attack Democrats over. It's like he wakes up in the morning and thinks, what's the dumbest possible argument I can use against the other side? And then he uses that argument. And I'll give you one more tease here before we jump into it. Somebody got jailed. I'm just going to ruin the story right now. Spoiler alert. Somebody got jailed for having loud sex. Where did it happen? And what are the specifics of that story? You're going to have to hang around till probably, what, that's the third segment. You're going to have to hang around over an hour to get to that point. But, okay, let's get started here, and we'll kick it off with some very substantive talk about Iraq. We have some horrendous news coming out of Iraq today. The new prime minister, Haider al-Abadi, said that the government lost 2,300 Humvees to ISIS in Mosul. 2,300 Humvees that we gave to Iraq, and now ISIS is driving around in them. So clearly us giving out Humvees and weapons all around the world, it always works out pretty well, doesn't it? So this happened last year, but we're just realizing the scope of the problem today. There's been various articles about this written today because just now the government is officially recognizing the disaster that it's been, and they're like, oh, we're missing 2,300 Humvees. That's a shame. Sucks that the worst barbarians on the planet have them, huh? Yeah, sure does. They say, quote, the Iraqi troops defending the city fled so hastily that some soldiers reportedly stripped off their uniforms and left behind the equipment they carried. Wow. Now, this also happened once before. Apparently, it happened again. ISIS likely obtained half a dozen tanks as well when they seized Ramadi. It's looking like a great idea that we created this Iraqi army and the Iraqi military, and we gave them billions of dollars worth of equipment. And let me give you some more facts on this. The Special Investigator General for Iraq Reconstruction found the following. On training the Iraqi military to $1 billion. That's just for training. That's just for training. And remember, they drop their shit and run every time they see ISIS. They shit their pants, and they just basically hand over all of the equipment and all the Humvees to ISIS because they're that scared. $1.32 billion on training, and then they just run in the other direction. Well-spent money, America. How about providing military logistical and maintenance support for the Iraqi military? How much does that cost? $2.6 billion. Isn't that stunning? Just like the upkeep, just the maintenance for the military, which is totally ineffectual, costs us $2.6 billion. I wonder if we could, like, take that money and maybe, I don't know, spend it here in rural areas in America where the school needs to be, where the schools need to be rebuilt. No, that's a crazy idea. Why would we do that? Renovating and building Iraqi military bases cost us $4.1 billion. Again, money well spent. Supplying the Iraqi military with aircraft, boats, tanks, armored personnel carriers, and other gear cost us $3.4 billion. Developing an elite counterterrorism force, which has done, to this point, absolutely nothing, bupkis, that costs us $237 million. Training, staffing, and supplying the Iraqi police, $9.4 billion. Developing the Sons of Iraq program to train and to provide jobs for about 100,000 mostly Sunni insurgents, that cost us $370 million. Now, this one is one of my favorites here because what did the Sunnis do when ISIS became more powerful? Well, many of them joined ISIS, as we know because former Baathists, many of them joined ISIS. So they're not personally religious lunatics, but they believe in having Sunni power over Shia power so much that they'll join with the craziest people on the fucking planet. So either they defected or they just, like, were neutral, and they just kind of stayed out of it, and they refused to actually fight the Sunnis. So another $370 million flushed down the toilet. How about developing other infrastructure security programs? Well, that costs us $300 million. The total cost of rebuilding, training, supplying the Iraqi military, police, and justice system, everything put together, cost us $26 billion. I'll repeat that, $26 billion. Now, you and I both know that money definitely could not have been used here for education or for health care or for social safety net programs or for any of a number of things. It definitely couldn't have been used here. That would have been stupid. It's not like we have a city called, I don't know, Detroit, where they don't even turn the water on and they say they don't have the funding to turn the water on. It's not like that exists in America. Oh, actually, yes, that's exactly what exists in America. But we just absolutely need to take $26 billion and give it to a military which is going to shit their pants and run every time they see a bad guy. Now, I haven't even gotten to the most amazing fact yet. We spoke about this recently. These are stories that came out about 6 months ago, but the Iraqi army has been paying salaries to at least 50,000 soldiers who don't exist. And actually, I should rephrase that because that's not totally accurate. The Iraqi army, paid for by the American taxpayer, has been paying salaries to at least 50,000 soldiers who don't exist. You and I have been paying the salaries of 50,000 soldiers who don't exist. And this is part of this $26 billion debacle, this quagmire, where we threw money at a problem and we got absolutely nothing in return for it. Now, what's the main takeaway here? This is the problem with the imperialist so-called do-gooders, the ones who think America should run the world and we should be in control and we need to provide security. The problem is these assholes don't have an understanding of history and don't have an understanding of the religious and tribal and regional and nationalistic differences in the region. Because if they did, they would have known from day one, Iraq is basically a fake country. It's three countries in one. You have one area for the Kurds, one area for the Sunnis, one area for the Shias. It's a country where the borders were drawn on a map in the 1930s by Britain and other Western powers. It's fake. It's made up. We made it up. So for us to go in there and try to prop up this fighting force, which doesn't actually have a sense of identity in Iraq, of course this is going to happen. Of course it's going to collapse. Of course they're going to run away. Of course ISIS is going to find a way to take the 2,300 or whatever it is Humvees that they took. Of course they're going to do that because ISIS cares about what they're doing. They have an identity. They have a religious purpose. They're fighting for what they think is a higher cause, and they're way more dedicated than the people in the fake country who we totally propped up. It's nothing but a house of cards, man. It's $26 billion that we may have well have fucking put on a bonfire and burnt it, because at least then we would have got some heat out of it. As of right now, we got nothing out of the $26 billion that we sent to Iraq, the fake country. The answer is we should have never went in there in the first place. I don't know how much more evidence you need. In conclusion, and this is the most important point, ISIS would not have the armament and the weapons that they have if it wasn't for our invasion. That's not an opinion, it's a fact. 2,300 Humvees is just the tip of the iceberg of the weapons that they got from us. When we went in there under the Bush administration and we eventually pulled back from certain areas, we left behind military bases, we left behind gyms, we left behind Humvees, tanks, aircrafts, small arms, everything. We left behind everything. So that's what they used to then fight against us. It's the same thing that happened with Ronald Reagan and the Mujahideen. Ronald Reagan armed the Mujahideen in Afghanistan because they were fighting the communists. They were fighting the Soviet Union. That's how much we hated the Soviet Union, that we armed Islamic militants and said, this is going to work out good. And then later on, what happened? The Mujahideen, of course, broke up into the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, and again, they fought us with our own arms. So we never learn the lessons of history. Why? Because we're the imperialist idiots in the world right now. We're the people who always think, we can fix it, we can find a way to maintain power and control and take all the natural resources. What did I say that out loud? I mean, we can be the world policemen and care about humanity and create stability. Except you didn't. You made everything much less stable. Okay. Now we're going to go to Rand Paul. On this same issue, the issue of Iraq. Rand Paul and Sean Hannity went back and forth on the issue of ISIS. Hannity disagreed with Rand, saying that the GOP is responsible for ISIS, as he did recently. Let's watch.
Let me move on to another issue where I do disagree with you. It's a statement that you made on NBC. Let me play it and we'll talk about it.
ISIS exists and grew stronger because of the hawks in our party who gave arms indiscriminately, and most of those arms were snatched up by ISIS. These hawks also wanted to bomb Assad, which would have made ISIS's job even easier. They created these people. ISIS is all over Libya because these same hawks in my party loved Hillary Clinton's war in Libya. They just wanted more of it.
Senator George W. Bush warned with pinpoint accuracy what would happen if we pulled out of Iraq without providing intelligence and training for Iraqi forces, or in the case of Syria, when the president draws a red line in the sand, it doesn't follow through. I'm not sure why you're blaming hawks in the party, because I was one of them. I supported the Iraq war for all the reasons that every intelligence agency in the world thought was real intelligence. I'm not sure why you're blaming your fellow conservatives.
Well, I think ultimately, I could have maybe stated it a little bit better. What I would say is that the ultimate people who are responsible for terrorism are obviously the terrorists. So ISIS is responsible for the mayhem, the murders, the brutality, the beheadings. That's ISIS. But I would say that we can have a valid discussion over whether or not ISIS has grown stronger by pouring arms into the Islamic rebels in the Syrian civil war. As we did, even our ambassador said that we will be giving arms to people who will fight alongside Al-Qaeda and alongside ISIS. And it is objective truth that ISIS grew stronger the more weapons that went into the Syrian civil war.
So I
think it was an unintended consequence that ISIS grew stronger because of weaponizing these Islamic rebels in
Syria.
But
you misspoke when you said hawks, conservatives in the party, created ISIS. You disagree with that now?
What I would say is that this was the policy of President Obama, it was a policy of Hillary Clinton, and it was also the policy of some in my party who wanted to arm the Islamic rebels. And I warned at the time that the great irony is that you arm these people, one day we'll have to go back and fight against these weapons ourselves. And I do think we have to do something about ISIS. I've been for declaring war against ISIS. But I've been disappointed that we have to fight against our own weapons. And I think had we not put those weapons into that civil war, we might not be in this fix at this point.
I have a funny feeling that debate is going to continue.
Now, I have to admit, when I first got my hands on this story, I think the headline was something like Rand Paul backtracks or Rand Paul backpedals or Rand Paul now says GOP isn't responsible for ISIS. And I thought, going into the article, after I read it and after I watched the clip here, that my takeaway would be, you bitch. You backpedal. You buckled under the pressure of Republicans saying, don't blame us. And upon watching the clip, my takeaway is, he didn't really backpedal. if anything, he clarified further, but it's kind of like a semi-double down also. And, you know, I kind of expected Hannity to try to fire back more, but here's the thing, Hannity can't fire back more, because what the fuck can his response possibly be? He's like, you know, Rand, I disagree with you about the Hawks being the ones to blame, because George W. Bush predicted with pinpoint accuracy exactly what would have happened and when we left Iraq, and that's the problem. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Hold on, son. You're giving George W. Bush credit for the situation in Iraq? I love how Republicans are willing to do revisionist history, but you're only allowed to do revisionist history under the Obama administration. You're only allowed to say, well, we shouldn't have withdrawn because then that's when all the problems started with the thing and the thing. Well, wait a second. If you want to do revisionist history, why not go further back and just say, the problem was when you opened Pandora's box to begin with and you did the invasion in the first place. That's the problem. And by the way, you're basically admitting that your solution would be, yeah, we should have just stayed in there forever. That's what we should have done. That's your argument. You said we shouldn't have withdrawn because Bush said when we pull out, everything's going to go to shit. But yeah, Sean, it's going to go to shit in 10 years, 20 years, or 150 years, whenever the fuck we get out of there. There's going to be a sectarian war and there's going to be conflict because we let the cat out of the bag to begin with. We did the original sin, which was the invasion, which riled up everything in the region anyway. You're not willing to admit that, but you are willing to blame Obama for getting out of there. That's not the problem. The problem wasn't getting out of there. The problem was getting in there in the first place. And when Rand Paul further clarifies, what are you going to say? You got nothing to say. Now, I understand it's in the context of a TV show, and a segment was probably up, and he had a hard break or something like that, so he couldn't respond. But where are you going to go off of what Rand Paul said there? He's right, as a conservative. What, you do want to arm Islamic militants in the region? Why would you do that? You're making the same mistake that the U.S. has made throughout history. We always fucking arm our enemies and then have to go in there and fight them. Look at Reagan with the Mujahideen. You armed the people who eventually became the Taliban and Al-Qaeda because at the time they were fighting the Soviet Union. And you thought the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So what can go wrong if we arm this person named Osama bin Laden? Let's arm that guy. He sounds like a gentleman. It's such a joke that these guys like Sean Hannity, who have been wrong about everything every step of the way, now he thinks like, you know, let me correct this guy Rand Paul here. I don't think he knows what he's talking about, even though he's been right all along on foreign policy. And understand, this will be the final thing I'll say on this real fast. Rand Paul's point is not the caricature that people on the right are making it. Rand Paul is not saying that, you know, the U.S. is responsible for the ideology of jihad. Now, are there some people who are like libertarians and conspiracy theorists and maybe even some uber liberals who are saying that, you know, there is no such thing as religious terrorism at all, and it's the U.S. is responsible for creating even the ideology of jihad? I'm sure there's some fringe people who say something like that, but that's not the point Rand Paul is making. When he says the GOP is responsible for creating ISIS and making them stronger, what he's saying is that ideology of jihadism existed in the first place, it existed without U.S. intervention, but we made those people more popular because of just how bad we fucked up the war and we fucked up the invasion. When we go into Iraq, as we did in 2003, and we de-Ba'athify the government, the secular Sunnis, what happened? Well, we learned from recent reports that, for example, one of Saddam's top generals, a Ba'athist general who was a military mastermind, he was pissed off. He didn't accept Maliki and the Shia rule when the Shia started repressing them. So what you did is you made the military mastermind join up with the religious lunatics in ISIS because they said we have a common cause, we're both Sunnis. And then because of that general, ISIS was successful in taking over tremendous swaths of land. So if it wasn't for you pissing off the Ba'athist population and de-Ba'athifying the government, ISIS would have never had the success that they had because they're a bunch of religious idiots who don't know military strategy and who don't know how to take more land. But they had the Ba'athist general on their side because of your fucked up invasion. All the people who are good fighters, Saddam's former generals, they teamed up with ISIS because of the U.S. invasion. If we didn't topple Saddam, if the Ba'athists were still in control, ISIS would never be as big as they are. And when he talks about us arming them, again, that's a fact. It's because we went in there under the Bush administration and we left behind Humvees, we left behind tanks, we left behind aircrafts, we left behind small arms. As a result of that, that's the weapons they picked up. That's not an opinion, that's a fact. So when Rand Paul says the GOP is responsible for expanding ISIS and making them more popular, that's not an opinion. And Sean Hannity is still going to disagree with it either way because he's a clown, he's a buffoon, and he has no idea what the fuck he's talking about. Okay. Let me do one more here, then we'll take our first break. Let's get into money and politics. This should be an interesting issue. The New York Times and CBS News released a poll on the issue of corruption and money in politics, and the numbers are absolutely overwhelming. So I want to run through some specifics here so you see just how crushing a victory this is for all of us who oppose this new American oligarchy that has come into place. So the first question they asked is, do you think money has too much or too little influence in campaigns? That's a nice softball right down the center of the plate here. 85% of the American people say, yes, money has too much influence in politics. Only 5% say it's too little. The next question is, how often do you think candidates who win public office promote policies that directly help the people and groups who donated money to their campaigns? Most of the time is 55%, sometimes is 30%, rarely is 9%. Again, overwhelming, people know what's going on. They're saying, oh, of course, the people who do campaign contributions, they're the ones who get the help. So I scratch your back, you scratch mine. If anything, it's just human nature. And a majority of the American people realize that. The next question is, do you think wealthy Americans have more of a chance to influence the election process than other Americans? 66% say yes, the wealthy have more influence. Again, a tremendous majority. Should we do minor changes, fundamental changes, or completely rebuild political campaigns in America? Minor is 13%, very tiny number there. Fundamental changes is 39%. And then look at this, man, completely rebuild. A plurality of the American people say we need to completely rebuild how we fund political campaigns. 46%, the biggest category. Next question is, should we have limited money in campaigns or unlimited money? Limited 77%, unlimited 21%. Is giving money to political candidates free speech? No, 54%. Yes, just 41%. We've won in every single category so far. Let's go to the next one here. Which party benefits the most from money in politics? Democrats, 14%. Republicans, 23%. Again, this is, I think, spot on, where more people are pointing out, yeah, the Republicans are kind of bigger sellouts, so that's why they have a higher number. I think a lot of people recognize that. But 58% for both equally. That's true. And it just so happens that the Democrats and the Republicans, they used to be bought off by different sets of special interests. The Republicans, it would be all, you know, Wall Street and the military-industrial complex and all the worst of the worst people. The Democrats, it was more like labor unions and teachers unions and lawyers and things like that. Slightly less scary special interests. Well, now, you know, ever since we've had these three or four Supreme Court cases that further legalize money in politics and corruption, ever since then, now they're kind of both taking money from the same groups of people. The big banks, the people on Wall Street, the military-industrial complex, as well as all those other special interest groups. And the American people kind of get it, which is why 58% of them are like, oh, yeah, it's both parties. They're both corrupt to their core. And then here's probably, believe it or not, the standout question. They asked, are you pessimistic or optimistic to change the system? 58% say they're pessimistic. So understand, on every other issue, the American people are with us. And they're saying, yes, we see the corruption, we see the money in politics, we see how that has destroyed our democracy. But when it comes to the solution, that's the one area where they're like, fuck, man, this system is so corrupt and so rotten to its core, I don't even see how we can fix it. I'm pessimistic about how we can fix this. Now, here's where I come in to give you some good news. Every time in American history before there was major change on a big issue, like, for example, slavery, or like segregation, or like getting rid of prohibition, on all these major issues, when eventually the good side won, If you had asked people 2 years before the change happened, people would have laughed in your face if you said that change was going to happen. Go talk to somebody in Mississippi in 1959, if anybody did that, you would have learned that everybody's like, segregation is going to stay forever. In fact, isn't the governor of, I think, Alabama, George Wallace, it was like one of his fucking campaign slogans or some shit, segregation now, segregation forever or something like that. The idea was, no, it is how it is, and it's going to stay this way, and why would it change? It's been like this forever. So everybody has a bias towards their current state of affairs. It's never going to change because this is how it is right now, so it's never going to change. The thing is, that's untrue. Because you can, if you fight hard enough and you make a good enough argument and you're aggressive enough, you can change history. We no longer have prohibition. We no longer have slavery. We no longer have segregation. You know, I mean, a lot of the popular movements contributed to getting us out of Vietnam. I mean, these things are important. They're incredibly important, and it's possible to make the change. So what we need to do is get up off of our ass and fight. It's that simple. And how do we fight? We fight the right way. We fight the smart way. We fight in ways that we know have worked in the past. So what I think makes sense, and my buddies over at TYT think it makes sense as well, is to try to get a constitutional amendment by going around Congress, because Congress is so fucking corrupt. Why would we go to them to fix the problem? They are the problem. So what do? We get a constitutional convention through the states. And we fight on a state level, and we're fighting for an amendment that mandates clean elections by law. Clean elections are not a radical idea. It's not a uber lefty communist idea. It's just the idea that in a democracy, the politicians should represent us. How do we get to a place where they do represent us? Well, you take away the incentives that they have to represent other people, the special interests, Wall Street, the military-industrial complex. Because they get all their money right now from, big corporations, they're going to represent big corporations. There's a trillion examples. We give them to you every day on the show. There was the Princeton study that found that the overwhelming majority of the American people, to the middle class and the poor, our politicians represent us 0% of the time. If they ever do something we like, it's by accident because some other corporation that actually has influence pushed in that direction. So the solution is you get rid of the money, which is the root of the problem in the system. If we have a democracy that's actually based on ideas and competing philosophies, then you have politicians, if they're only getting paid by us, they're only going to represent us. So you do clean elections by law, you end corporate personhood, and you get us back to a place where we have a government that it's at least somewhat representative of us. And what this poll shows right here is that the American people are ready and willing and waiting for a solution because they all see the problem. They can identify the problem. So now it's just a matter of organizing and getting the right policy. It is the right policy to fight through Wolfpack and to get this amendment. So if you want to join in that fight, you go to wolf-pack.com. You sign up there. You sign the petition. You can send an email to the director over there. You'll see the name on the website, and you can ask, hey, what can I do? You can call your congressman and ask them to support it at a state level, of course. And you can even just knock on doors or go testify when there's a hearing over it, or you can even have a meeting with your state congressperson or state representative. There are ways to fight here, and there are ways to win. It's just a matter of us actually putting in the effort now because we all know the problem. All right, guys, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, conservative George Will weighed in on Bernie Sanders' presidential run, and Rush Limbaugh attacks John Kerry for the dumbest reason you can imagine.
Than a cannonball. Where were you while we were getting high?
Son of a bitch, all right, we're back, guys. All right, let's get on to interesting story involving Bernie Sanders here. Conservative commentator George Will weighed in on Bernie Sanders' presidential run, and his comments are actually really interesting because the first half of what he says makes perfect sense, and then he veers off into a ditch.
George, how about the renewed attention on Bernie Sanders in this race?
Well, politics is supposed to be fun. That's why Democratic activists are in it, because it's fun, and he's fun in the sense that he's kind of naughty. He says he's an independent, and he says he's a socialist. In fact, he's neither. In no meaningful sense is he an independent. When he caucuses with the Democrats, he votes with the Democrats. He gets his committee assignments from the Democrats, and they count against the Democrats' quotas. And, by the way, he's seeking the nomination of the Democratic Party, so he's a Democrat. And being a socialist, I don't know what he means by that. Once upon a time, socialism meant the government ownership of the means of production, distribution, and exchange. Then they watered it down, and it meant public ownership of the commanding heights of the economy, heavy industry, and all that. And now it's European social democracy. And I, a few months ago, asked him what he meant by socialism. He said, social democracy in Europe. So I guess we're supposed to think Greece is what he has in mind for the United States. But social democracy means heavy regulation of commerce. We've got that in this country. It means a social safety net. 66% of our federal budget is entitlement programs. And it means redistribution of wealth. Our federal government does very little else but redistribute money. I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. Like I said, he started out fine discussing, you know, hey, what's really the definition of socialism? What exactly is Bernie Sanders? And then towards the end of the clip, he's like, George, you're so sad. The thing is, this is the guy that people on the right view as an intellectual. And if this is your intellectual, oh my God, you're in trouble. Because what he is, he's just a curmudgeonly old man who latched on to his idea of what politics is when he was like 26 years old, and he's never deviated, he's never grown, he doesn't really keep up with the nuances of what's going on in the news, and he's just got like, you know, he reminds me of like an uncle that you'd talk to at the Thanksgiving dinner table, who's just like, who strikes you as just the term bigot. And bigot in the sense that just like married to your own opinions and like, get off my lawn, I don't like these damn kids. He called Bernie Sanders naughty. Bernie Sanders is a lot of things. I'm not sure naughty is one of those things. I don't want to think about Bernie Sanders and naughty in the same sentence together. Kind of gross. But here's the reality. Bernie Sanders isn't naughty. Bernie Sanders is mainstream. That's the real way to describe him. And when I say mainstream, I don't mean mainstream within the context of our crazy establishment political system, the corporatocracy that we've set up. No, I mean mainstream as in right in line with the opinions of the American people. And again, that's not just my opinion. That's a fact. If you look at polls from all the reputable polling companies, whether it's Gallup or Pew or Washington Post or whoever, you know, you find out very quickly, oh, look, the American people are with Bernie Sanders on immigration, on climate change, on taxing the rich, on Social Security and Medicare, on war. I mean, he's right smack dab in the center. He's a centrist, he's a moderate, he's an independent, he's mainstream. And that's the thing, is when you listen to a guy like George Will talk, you realize, oh, he's representing the right wing of the American establishment political system, which is fucking far out there, bordering on fascism, the way he thinks, or at least in favor of an oligarchy. And listen to some of his comments at the end there. Well, I guess what Bernie wants is, like, Greece. He wants America to be Greece. You buffoon! And understand, I actually think that this isn't just, like, he's being dumb. This is, he is misleading. Because he could have said, and he knows he could have said, he wants America to be more like Scandinavia. But the thing is, George Will didn't say that. Why didn't he say that? Because he knows Scandinavia is fucking lovely. And they do objectively, empirically better than us in many areas. They have better health care systems. They have better education systems. They have a higher minimum wage. They have people who self-report being happier. They have better social safety net programs. They have universal daycare. I mean, these are systems where we can learn a lot from those systems, and we can, if we tried, get the same quality of life as they get. But this is exactly why he didn't mention that area and those countries, Norway, Denmark, Iceland, etc., because he knows that, you know, people hear that and maybe go, that actually seems perfectly reasonable. What, we can't learn from anybody in the world? Nobody else does anything better? And he also just came up with bullshit there. Like, oh, 66% of our federal budget is entitlement programs. I don't know how much more wealth redistribution we can do. Asshole, stop fucking misleading. You're talking mostly there about Medicare and Social Security. That's what you're referring to. And Medicare and Social Security is not an entitlement program as much as it's an earned benefit program, a social insurance program. It's not like an entitlement in the sense that, oh, you're a parasite, you're a moocher, you're lazy, you're just trying to get back something you didn't earn, it's welfare. No, you paid into it your whole life, you're just getting back what you're owed. To say 66% of the federal budget is welfare is an entitlement is totally misleading, because it makes it seem like our government is so skewed in favor of helping the poor, and that's just not the right thing to do. No, it's not. Our government helps the poor less than virtually every other modern industrial nation. We have the most meager social safety net there is in the modern world. And if you want to talk about cutting back on big government, let's have that conversation. Let's fucking slash military spending in half. Our bloated military spending dwarfs the rest of the world. We're bigger. We spend more than the next 14 biggest militaries combined, and most of them are our fucking allies. You can't talk about, you know, cutting big government unless you talk about cutting military spending and cutting corporate welfare. $80 billion a year going to these banks in the form of a corporate welfare check? Why would we do that? Why does that industry need a leg up more than, you know, the fucking deli down the street or the dry cleaners down the street? It's the government playing favorites amongst the rich, because those are the people who give them their campaign contributions. Which leads me to my final point here. To be in favor of social democracy is simply to be in favor of democracy, in essence. Because, again, if you look at the polling data, the American people are reasonable. They're not trying to totally, you know, scrap capitalism as we know it. They're not against the idea of a meritocracy to a certain extent. But the idea is you have to give everybody an equal opportunity. And that's what the social democracies do. And that's what Bernie Sanders represents. He represents something that the majority of the American people want. He represents what I like to describe as the last stop on the capitalism train before you get to actual socialism. So it's a very moderate, very centrist form of government, and a very centrist, moderate form of an economic system, where you say, okay, certain things will be nationalized, and we'll have universal health care, universal education, good regulation, good infrastructure, a nice social safety net, you know, give people vacation time by law, things like that. And you still keep an element of individualism and rugged independence within the form of some aspects of a capitalist structure in some areas. So this is what Bernie Sanders represents. This is what the American people want. And this is what George Will is totally mischaracterizing and trying to slander. Okay, next. Let's go to Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh attacked Secretary of State John Kerry on his show yesterday. For those of you who didn't hear yet, Kerry actually broke his leg while riding a bicycle. So here's Rush Limbaugh's reaction to that.
You hear about John Kerry? You know how John Kerry is? It's tough. You know, you can't tell a horse's age when you look at it. And since Kerry looks like a horse, it's tough. But he's 71 years old. Now, would somebody tell me something? What is a 71-year-old man, Secretary of State, doing riding a bicycle, or alternatively windsurfing off Nantucket? Why is somebody riding a bicycle while in the midst of sensitive negotiations and attempting to secure nuclear weapons for Iran? Oh, exercise? BS. He's doing that for the photo op, trying to look hip with the young generation that thinks life is all about exercise and fitness and so forth. It's a photo op. That's why he's out there riding the bike, same thing with the windsurfing. It's embarrassing to me.
Rush Limbaugh just found a way to come out against exercise because Democrats do it. That is embarrassing, Rush. Nothing John Kerry did is embarrassing. What you're saying is embarrassing. And Rush, have you looked in a mirror recently? I believe the scale, when you step on it, says beluga whale. And this guy's going to mock John Kerry. Ah, he looks like a horse. And what, you're fucking George Clooney over there? Is that what you're arguing? Dude, you just argued against exercise. Why is he riding a bike trying to, like, be healthy and live longer? What a fucking asshole. We're conservatives. We're against that. How dare he exercise is basically the argument. Even, I don't know if you caught it, but like when he mentioned exercise, he was responding to, you know, one of the people in his control room or whatever. Because he's like, what is he doing riding a bike? And even his little minions who were yes men in the control room were like, Rush, I think he was exercising. Rush is like, no, that's stupid. And then he says, well, he's doing it for a photo op. Rush, he's not running for anything. He makes it, oh, he's just doing it to try to fit in with these young kids and these assholes who actually think exercising is good. He's trying to fit in with them. So stupid. But Rush, he's not, like, he doesn't need votes for anything. He doesn't need to pander for any reason. He's already the Secretary of State, and he's not running for anything. So maybe he is exercising because he wants to be healthy. But this concept is foreign to Rush Limbaugh. He's like, either eat and be super fat and unhealthy, or you get your fucking stomach cut in half, you do the surgery, and then cheat to lose weight. That's what I would do. And he also managed to slip in there. He's, quote, attempting to secure nuclear weapons for Iran. Somehow, in a segment where Rush Limbaugh literally comes out against exercise, that's not even the most outrageous thing he said. The most outrageous thing is, John Kerry is attempting to secure nuclear weapons for Iran. Yes, that's right, Rush. That's what all these negotiations are about. That's what Obama's on the record saying. I would like to give Iran nukes. If they wanted to give Iran nukes, here's how they could do it, Rush. They could give Iran nukes. We only have a bazillion nukes. No, it's not about giving them nukes. No, the negotiation is specifically so they don't get nukes. That's the idea. And by the way, we got a fantastic deal that does exactly that. And this is when those idiots say, oh, you can't trust the Iranians. I don't know, these naive Democrats trusting the Iranians. Nobody's trusting anybody. The deal is based on verification. The deal is based on the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, being a watchdog and repeatedly checking what the Iranians are doing. And remember, there's hard limits. They can't enrich uranium above a certain point that would be above the point for research and energy for their grid for their people. So we got the perfect deal, but Rush Limbaugh's like, no, this means that the Democrats want nukes, and oh yeah, fuck exercise. Somehow I didn't even need to hear a segment about Rush Limbaugh saying fuck exercise to know that Rush Limbaugh is anti-exercise. Okay. Now we'll do one or two more here before we take our final break. I'm going to educate you on something interesting about weed, which I didn't know. Newser has an interesting article out about how certain cultures, weed use may be a form of subconscious medicine. So, in other words, it's helping them with some serious medical problem, and they have no idea about that. They basically just think it's recreational. So here's what they say in an article from Newser on the issue of marijuana. Quote, an anthropologist says the AKA, or the Aka foragers of the Central African Republic, may be unconsciously using marijuana to ward off parasitic intestinal worms. Ed Hagen of Washington State University, Vancouver, said that surveyed almost all the adult Aka, about 400 pygmy people in one of the last hunter-gatherer tribes, to determine how non-Western populations use marijuana, and found about 70% of the men and 6% of the women smoked. Hagen and his team analyzed men's stool samples and found 95% had infections from parasitic intestinal worms. However, cannabis users had lower rates of infection than non-users. In the same way we have a taste for salt, we might have a taste for psychoactive plant toxins, because these things kill parasites. So that's really interesting, because what they're saying is there's a reason why your body has the reaction that it does to marijuana or to THC. There's a reason why you get that high feeling. That's essentially, you know, the universe telling you, hey, you should want to get high, because when you're doing it, you're actually doing something very positive, and you don't even realize it. You know, like, what you're doing is you're killing these intestinal parasites, and you didn't even know they were fucking there. But because this thing feels good, it's giving you the feedback to continue to do it, because it's actually serving a very important purpose. Now, I should be clear that this needs more study, and this isn't conclusive yet, but I wouldn't be surprised by it, man. You know what it honestly made me think of? It made me think of reproduction. Like, there's a reason why reproduction feels good, because that's essentially the universe trying to tell you, yeah, perpetuate the species. Okay, let's continue here. So orgasms feel fucking fantastic. There's a reason behind that, a deeper biological reason, that if you ask somebody, you know, when they just learn about sex and start having sex, they probably couldn't tell you that the reason why sex feels good is you're supposed to want to procreate. Well, it's the same thing for something like this. If you get a good feeling off of taking, you know, smoking marijuana, well, maybe there's a deeper reason for that that we didn't realize before, because we just didn't do any research and we didn't understand all the benefits that it has. And this is just one area. Again, remember, chances are in many areas there's positive effects to marijuana. Not to say that doesn't mean there aren't some downsides. I'm sure there's downsides to using all types of drugs. But that, of course, there are still upsides. When it comes to how we discuss drugs in society today, we're still kind of recovering from that idiotic Reagan era and before that, when the idea was you have to pretend like there's no positives in any way, shape, or form that any drug can bring you. Well, we just know that's not true. We covered an article about a year ago or 2 years ago. It was like top 11 geniuses and their drugs of choice. And there was like Freud was on there, Carl Sagan was on there, you had neuroscientist John Lilly was on there. And who, you know, which one was snorting cocaine like a badass? Freud was doing that. One of the most brilliant men that ever lived was high on cocaine virtually his whole life. You had others that were doing psychedelic drugs nonstop and talking about the transformative experience that it was in their life. I think Steve Jobs was one of these guys, or somebody, did that. You have a lot of these guys smoked marijuana. I mean, it's not like there are no upsides. Of course there are upsides. You have to weigh, there's a balance going on here. There's, you know, a fine line where you can be a moderate user of these substances and be totally productive, and it can actually be a benefit to you. It's funny how if you just call something a supplement, everybody understands, like, oh, okay, so you can use that moderately and it can benefit you. But once you give it the term drug, everybody's like, oh, drugs are bad. But whether you call it supplement or drug, it's essentially the same thing. We're talking about a chemical that you put in your body, makes you feel a certain way, and does certain things. We got to stop with this all-or-nothing mentality, the way we talk about these drugs. Because the reality is, oftentimes, stuff like this is true, and we don't even realize it yet. Again, that marijuana fucking kills off parasitic worms, and that may be one of the reasons why humans have been smoking it for really fucking long. It has all these benefits that we couldn't even fucking really categorize yet, because we didn't know about them yet. All right. Now let me do one more here. And then we'll take our final break, and this one will be Ryan Fisher. Haven't spoken about this guy in a while, I don't think. Conservative Christian radio host Brian Fisher had a meltdown on air while discussing Bruce Jenner's Vanity Fair piece where he announced his new identity as Caitlyn Jenner. Let's watch.
There's a cover story on the cover of Vanity Fair magazine. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want one snapshot of just how corrupt, how morally corrupt, how morally bent, how morally twisted, how morally confused, how morally bankrupt we have become, all you've got to do is take a look at the cover of Vanity Fair magazine. There is a cover photo of a man who is dressed up as a woman. You know, my heart, frankly, goes out to Bruce Jenner. I'm not going to call him Caitlyn Jenner because that's not his name, and I'm not going to refer to him as a she. He's a he. He's a he in every single solitary cell of his body. He will be until the day that God calls him home. So he's a male, every single cell of his body. So he's always going to be a he. Terminology that I'm going to use, I'm never going to refer to him as a she because that would be a lie. That's wrong. That's an error. That's just it's biological, scientific, genetic, medical error. It's falsehood. It's one of those strongholds that we got to attack. Lord, we pray that you will clear up Bruce Jenner's sexual confusion. Lord, we fear for him. We pray that you would intervene and remove the veil that's enabled him to believe this lie about himself and to deny your truth about what you have made him to be. So we ask you to expose the lies of Satan and break their power over his mind, break their power over his heart, and set him free from this confusion and from this lie. We pray in Jesus' name. Because I don't want Bruce Jenner to go out and kill himself. I don't want him to think about it. I don't want him to try it, and I don't want him to succeed. And that's the risk that he's running now by going full bore in this direction. And what I'm here to suggest to you is that we care, those of us that are saying this is not a good thing, those of us that are saying, look, this is bad for Bruce Jenner, bad for his future, we are showing far more compassion to him than the editors of Vanity Fair. They are showing no compassion for him, no genuine care for him, because they are celebrating his progress down a pathway that could lead him to kill himself.
Breathe, Brian, breathe. Thou dost protest too much, son. My favorite part was at the beginning when he says this, quote, "This is one snapshot of just how morally corrupt, morally twisted, morally confused, and morally bankrupt we've become." This is your example of how we're morally bankrupt? Somebody is transgender? No, but see, this really shows you the difference between how ultra-conservatives think, in this case, an ultra-conservative Christian, and normal people think. Because you know what, when I would use a quote like that, again, one snapshot of just how morally corrupt, morally twisted, morally confused, and morally bankrupt we've become, I would say something like that, oh, I don't know, when discussing the Iraq War, an invasion of a country that didn't attack us, had nothing to do with 9/11, didn't have weapons of mass destruction, and then, oh yeah, we stayed there for over 10 years. That would be morally bankrupt. You know what else would be morally bankrupt? CIA torture when we did rectal feeding, which isn't even a thing. Doctors spoke out about it after. They're like, yeah, they're saying it's a medical procedure? No, it's not. So we just shoved tubes up the ass of innocent people, by the way, at Guantanamo, and pumped food in there. All the while, we're claiming we have the moral high ground here. We gave one person hypothermia. We poured cold water on him, left the window open, left, came back in the morning, he was dead. A guy died because we did hypothermia torture, and that guy was innocent, as were at least 25% of the people who we tortured, that the CIA tortured, after 9/11. And then there's sleep deprivation, loud music torture, mock burials, threatening to rape and attack family members. This is morally bankrupt. But Brian Fisher's like, no, I support all that stuff. I'm like, oh, God damn it, transgender people exist. That's morally bankrupt. You know, your moral compass, Brian, is bankrupt. And what's hilarious is that this guy thinks he's a follower of Jesus. a lot of Jesus's message in the New Testament is, you know, love your neighbor, care for the sick, care for the downtrodden. Jesus Christ is basically a communist before communism came into being. But this guy is the opposite in every sense of the word. Now, also, he moves on to, well, he's a man, it's biological, it's science. That's the end of the conversation. Okay, well, let's continue it. Riddle me this, Brian. He's also transgender. That's science as well. It is scientifically true that transgender people exist. So some people are born male and they feel male. Some people are born female and they feel female. Some people are straight, some people are gay, some people are bi. Some people are born biologically male, but they feel female. Some people are born biologically female, but they feel male. That exists! That exists! So if somebody is essentially born in the wrong body and they feel that and they know that in their core, why would you stop them from trying to be happy? That's all that this comes down to here. But again, it goes back to this is where some personal stuff about Brian Fisher comes into play. Because every time he does a story about gay people, and now apparently transgender people too, it's thou doth protest too much. You know, he really is, oh God, don't do that, don't do that, I want to do that also. I mean, what? Just don't do it because it's wrong. And then finally, he pretends like he's the one who cares deeply. I don't want Bruce Jenner to kill himself. Great. I agree, which is why you should stop critiquing him simply because he's being who he really is. Now he is a she. So that's the problem. You know, people, oh, there's a high suicide rate among transgender people. That's what, you know, conservative Christians point to as evidence as to why people shouldn't be transgender. No. That's, if anything, that's evidence that you should stop being assholes to transgender people. Like many people do, they kick them out of their homes because they don't accept them, their families don't accept them because of their religious beliefs or their ideology. They're not open-minded, society isn't kind to them, it's hard for them to hold down a job, it's hard for them to be accepted by the mainstream of society. The problem isn't Caitlyn Jenner, Brian, the problem is you. Okay, let me take a quick break. When we come back, we'll finish up here. Got a bunch of great stuff, including, I got to get into the crazy Muslims and the crazy Jews and the crazy, Oh, the woman jailed for having sex too loud, all this great stuff. Quick break, come right back.
Thank you.
Son of a bitch. Alright, guys.
Trouble like you're building a mosh pit. I'm busted, and that's the only way that we rock shit. Banging heads, tearing the threads.
A lot of shit I gotta get to. More religious assholes. Stick with the Christians here. Jim Baker is, of course, a criminal and a con man and a disgraced televangelist. And he had on his new show, yes, he has a new show, because that's the world we live in, the lunatic radio host Rick Wiles to make some hysterical anti-American arguments. So let's watch this and try your best as you're listening here to imagine this through the eyes of a dingbat right-winger. So listen to this and put yourself in the mind of a right-winger and imagine that you get a steady diet of this every day for a few years.
We have outlawed God. Our Supreme Court has outlawed God. You can't put up the Ten Commandments. Used to be they were the basis of law, basis of the courts. Not anymore. What has happened to America?
Jim, I said on the program 15 years ago, at least 15 years ago, I said there is a day coming. I said, this is going to be the scariest scene you can ever imagine. There is a day coming when our military will be a pagan atheist army. And you, Mr. and Mrs. Christian, will be the enemy. Do you think when the military has chased all the Christians out, all the God-fearing men, when they've chased them out, locked them up, whatever, do you think then when you have a antichrist man in the White House, whether it's this one or a future one, and he tells a atheistic, God-hating military, these Christians are enemies of the state. Do you think it would be hard for them to round us up? They'll be doing their patriotic duty.
They've already listed the Christians.
Yes, that's right.
With the enemies.
That's right. When you were asking, how's this happening? This Third Reich is here. This Nazism is here. Okay, it's springing up. It's scary. Listen, the rest of the world sees it. The Russians are referring to us as the Nazis. If you read carefully what the Russians are saying, if you translate their Russian speeches into English, they're talking about the new Nazis.
We finally figured out what it takes to make right-wingers support Russia. To elect President Barack Obama. Just have a black Democrat in office in America, and all of a sudden the people who hated the Soviet Union and hated Russia, now they're like, look, their propaganda calls us Nazis, so it must be true. Listen to how insane these people are. Now think about what I told you before the clip there. I said, imagine you are one of these ultra-right wingers. Put yourself in that person's shoes and listen to this stuff. Dude, this talk gets dangerous, man, because if anybody actually believes what they're saying, and there are people in America who believe what they're saying, well, goddamn, this is where you get the radicalization that leads to people joining the Sovereign Citizens Movement, which is the homegrown domestic terrorist movement. This is how you get the stat that we talk about all the time, how 56% of the terrorist attacks and attempted terrorist attacks in the United States of America are done by right-wingers. It's because of hysterical lunatics like this who people listen to and they think they're giving some sort of expert analysis. Let's break some of this stuff down, man. He said, we have outlawed God. SCOTUS has outlawed God. Really? I missed the memo. So the Supreme Court outlawed God. How? What are you talking about? So now everybody's mandated by law to be an atheist? That's not my spin on it. I'm giving you a quote. Outlawed God. The Supreme Court has outlawed God. No, they didn't. You made that up. He said, the Ten Commandments was the basis of law. No, it wasn't. You made that up. Only like, what is it, two of the Ten Commandments? At most, three of the Ten Commandments are laws? The other is shit like, don't worship on Sunday, or I'm sorry, don't worship false gods, honor your mother and father, stupid shit like that. Only two or three of them are laws. He's like, that was the basis of law, was the Ten Commandments. Again, that's not true. You made that up because you're a Christian dingbat. Then he said, the military is a pagan and atheist army. The overwhelming majority of the people in the military are Christian. And if anything, there's a problem in the other direction right now in the military. There are these stories of these Christian dominionists in the army who are basically like the Christian Taliban, who are uber religious, and they're, you know, the people who are stationed in other countries, and there's the fear that they might go rogue and do crazy shit in the name of their religion because they believe in this crazy version of fundamentalism. The problem is not the atheists in the military. The problem is certainly not the pagans in the military. I'd be surprised if there's one person who describes himself as a pagan in the U.S. military. But again, this is the kind of nonsense that these guys spew every day because they're just not that smart. They're stupid people who make up conspiracy theories and they run with it, and they've totally let go of empirical reality, of objective reality. And by the way, even if, let's say the army was, for argument's sake, let's say it was 60% atheist. It's not. It's nowhere near that. But let's say it was that. Notice the assumption these guys make. Well, if they're atheists, they're obviously going to come and round up all the Christians and kill us. The fuck are you? No! No! And this all goes back to tribalism again. We're the good guys. Everybody else is the bad guys. The Muslims are bad. The atheists are bad, and if they have any kind of power, they're obviously going to kill all of us, and they're obviously going to, you know, oppress us. Now, why do they think that way? Because that's how they think, so they're projecting onto you. So they think, like, well, if we have control of everything, fuck yeah, I'd set up a Christian theocracy. Fuck yeah, I'd outlaw atheism and kick out the Muslims from the country. Fuck yeah, I'd do that. So they're afraid that, you know, atheists would treat them that way. But we're smarter than you. We're not going to do that. Then he says, the military is going to round up Christians. Totally made up. They're majority Christian. The president is Christian. The overwhelming majority of people in government are Christian. The government listed Christians with the enemies. So they listed themselves as the enemy. Yeah, that's the problem in America. Our government is just totally anti-Christian. Now, you know what it is? They view it as oppression if you tell them they can't force their religion on you and everybody else in society. So if we can't set up a Christian theocracy that abides by their version of Christianity, then you're oppressing them if you don't allow them to set that up. But that's not oppression. In this case, the oppressors very clearly are you. All right, next. So those are the Christian crazy people. Now let's go to the Muslims. During a press conference at a local hotel in Islamabad, a Muslim cleric and politician in Pakistan drank a giant glass of idiot juice, so now we can all mock him. So according to the New Indian Express, Fazlur Rahman, quote, asked the Pakistani armed forces to launch a military operation against women wearing jeans all over Pakistan. Okay, I know this sounds like The Onion, but I can assure you it's not The Onion. They say, quote, according to him, the immodesty of women is the cause behind earthquakes, inflation, and other kinds of disasters. Rahman then blamed immodest women for the lack of energy supply and the deteriorating security situation in Pakistan. Now, this guy, he even goes on to say, he's like, oh, you guys are crazy. You don't get it. The Taliban is not the problem. See, if we just covered up our women from head to toe and implemented Sharia law, the Taliban would be cool with us, dude. So just do that. I mean, come on. You're the asshole here. Just implement Sharia. Cover up all the women. What's your problem? Our problem is that we don't want to do that. They don't want to do that. He's like, just give the Taliban everything they want, and then everything will be okay. No shit, Sherlock, but they don't want to give them everything they want. That's the point. I love how he flips it. He's like, these women who are hurting nobody and wearing jeans, they're the problem. Meanwhile, the Taliban, who literally just in Pakistan gunned down an entire school of people, They're not the problem. You know, murdering innocent kids, debatable. They're not really the bad guys. Now, these women in jeans, on the other hand, they're provoking the goddamn Taliban. That's what's happening. They should cover up. Whores. Okay, man, look. This is what fundamentalist religious thinking gets you. Okay, there are various verses in all the different holy books about how women should be property, women are lesser than you, women need to cover themselves up. And this is the fucking result of people who actually believe that. I don't deny this guy's sincerity. I don't deny that he really believes that it's because women are showing off their curves that you've now angered God, and God needs to bring wrath on us to make sure that we follow the holy book. Well, insofar as you actually believe the holy book, that makes sense. As long as you accept the shit that's actually in the book, then all of a sudden that makes sense, because in the context of the book, he's making a somewhat logical connection. Oh, we are violating this rule of God's, so now we are getting punished from God because of that. But the craziest thing about these religious people is that, let's say hypothetically they did an experiment where they, okay, let's cover up all the women exactly how he wants for X amount of time. When all the bad things continue to happen in that time frame, will he view it as like, well, you proved me wrong. We did everything that God wanted, and lo and behold, we still have inflation, we still have natural disasters, we still have earthquakes, all these other problems. So, okay, you were right, they can wear jeans again. Would he do that? Fuck no! Because that's the thing, once you let go of rationality, and once you let go of empirical objective reality, there's no telling where you end up. So these guys flip-flop based on their whims, they flip-flop based on their bigotry. They certainly are bigots, and they also take a lot of stuff and cherry-pick from their holy books. But what we all should realize is this kind of thinking, this is the problem. These people are the enemy. These people are the bad guys. This isn't a legitimate opposition. This isn't somebody who should be taken seriously. But the crazy thing is, he actually is the opposition in Pakistan. This guy's a well-known person. He's a Muslim cleric in Pakistan, and he was a politician, very well-known around the entire country. And he's casually like, yeah, women and jeans, that's the fucking problem with everything in the world. So, you know, we see it here with Pat Robertson and John Hagee blaming atheism and blaming 9/11 on atheism and abortions and stuff like that. The fundamentalists, man, they're running rampant, they're running wild, and I mean, I guess the only good news is when they say shit like that, they're basically putting on the dunce hat and saying, here I am, guys, here I am. Well, we have to hope that we just keep this kind of thought process to a minimum because, goddamn, it is absurd. Okay. All right, so we went from the Christians to the Muslims, now the Jews. Like I said, equal opportunity destroyer today. The Guardian is reporting on some fundamentalist religious nonsense coming out of North London. They say, quote, leaders of an ultra-Orthodox Jewish sect have said children who are driven to school by their mothers will be turned away at the school gates. Rabbis from the marginal Hasidic sect Bells have told women in Stamford Hill who drive that they go against the traditional rules of modesty. In a letter sent to parents last week, seen by the Jewish Chronicle, they say there has been an increase in the number of mothers driving their children to school and add that this has led to great resentment among parents of pupils of our Hasidic institutions. So let's understand this. The women were driving the kids to school, and then you have ultra-Orthodox men who witnessed this, and they were outraged. They said, oh, you have offended my better sensibilities and my higher morality, and now we are banning women driving their kids to school. Now, again, what I want to stress in this story is that, understand, guys, the ultra-Orthodox men who are saying to the women, okay, now you're not allowed to do this anymore, they think they are more moral than you. They think they are more moral than these women who are violating God's law. They think they have the one truth here. And that's the thing, to go back to the same talking points I've been hitting in the previous stories, that's the thing that's so scary about religion, is that if you actually believe, you know, in this case, the Torah, but if you believe any holy book, whether it's the Quran, or the Bible or the Bhagavad Gita or whatever book, right? Well, then it doesn't become so irrational to take some of the stupid, backwards, draconian, archaic laws in there and say, no, I'm just following what God said. I know I'm right because God said it. And look, this goes back to a point that new atheists make all the time, which is that people are only good religious people or moderate religious people insofar as they're blowing off many parts of their religion. Now, I get it, and I'm the first to argue that you really can find very, very good things and very bad things in all the holy books. But that's why it's so scary, is that it's not like the people who are arguing for the good interpretation are right, any more than the people arguing for the really conservative, bad, immoral interpretations are right. So you're just having a battle of dueling cherry pickers. I'll pick the good parts, you pick the negative parts, and then I'll say I'm right and you say you're right. But nobody wins that argument, because both the good and the bad are in the holy book. And in this case, dealing with fundamentalists, and this goes for fundamentalist Muslims, fundamentalist Christians, and fundamentalist Jews, ultra-Orthodox Jews, there are people who believe it, and then they argue for it, and they're so convinced that they're right that they think you're the crazy one if you're not on board with it. You know, we just did the story, very similar story of the guy from Pakistan who blamed earthquakes and inflation on women wearing jeans. He went as far as to say, you can't be mad at the Taliban. They're just following God. You have to be mad at the women who are provoking God, making God mad, and giving us earthquakes because they're showing their lovely lady lumps. So this is what the Muslims think. The Christians think very similarly as well, and the ultra-Orthodox Jews think it. And what drives me crazy is that some people think that in the name of tolerance, we have to say, well, they're just living differently, so we got to let them live differently and tolerate that. No, 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 no. There's a difference between tolerance and tolerating intolerance. Don't be an idiot relativist, right? A real moral relativist. You're like, well, they're just doing it different, and you can't pass any moral judgment. It's just different. No, no, no. You can pass judgment. You absolutely can pass judgment. Because what you're standing up against is bigotry. What you're standing up against is sexism. What you're standing up against is religious dogmatism. You shouldn't pull punches because it might be a group that, you know, you don't belong to and you view them as like a minority or something like that. And oftentimes you see this from liberals, for example, when it comes to criticizing fundamentalist Muslims. They take what's the fear of being viewed as an Islamophobe, right? And they take a real concern of, you know, being bigoted towards Muslims and real Muslim persecution, which does exist. They take fear of those things and they extrapolate it too far, where they say, well, any criticism then of Muslims is the same as Islamophobia and you're a bigot. No, but it's not bigoted to say that the guy who's against women wearing pants, that he's wrong and he shouldn't be on that side and we disagree with him and we should win that argument and we should win in the political realm against that kind of thinking. Same thing goes for ultra-Orthodox Jews here. They're like, we don't want women to drive. I don't give a fuck if you don't want women to drive. Nobody gives a fuck what you think. Right? If I came to you and said, I don't want you to drive, would you accept it? They'd be like, that's outrageous. Why should I listen to you? Exactly! You shouldn't listen to me if I tell you you shouldn't drive. By the same token, the women you're married to shouldn't listen to you if you say it's your opinion based on your interpretation of your book that they shouldn't drive. I'm so tired of this religious nonsense, man. Stop looking at old desert texts that are primitive and dumb and not factual and basing your life on it. I've said this before to people. If I gave you a blank sheet of paper and a pen and said, here, write down the 10 rules that are most important that one should live by in their life. And as long as I'm giving the piece of paper and a pen to somebody who's over the age of about 25, I guarantee you that that list that that person makes is going to have much more wisdom in it than any of the holy books, than any of the holy books. Because with the holy books, there's always good and bad. I can guarantee you there's not going to be slavery. There's not going to be making your father get drunk and then you rape him in the list that I give any person a right today. Well, there is slavery in the Bible. There is slavery in the Quran. There is having, you know, raping your father after you get him drunk in the Bible. There's all types of negative shit. So why would you believe it and why would you live your life based on it? It's because of indoctrination. And it's because you were told it's right when they presented no evidence to you. And a lot of good people fall into the trap of thinking, well, this is just how, this is what my mom and dad believed, and they're good people, So when they tell me it, yes, I'm going to call myself a Catholic, or I'm going to call myself a Muslim, or I'm going to call myself a Protestant, or I'll call myself a Jew because I was born into it. But it's almost like you're allowing yourself to be absurd in this area. What is it? You got to think, what does it mean to be a Jew or a Christian or a Muslim or any of that stuff? What does it mean to be that? Well, in its purest sense, what it means is you're a part of this club. You're a part of this group which believes in this book, and this book is the Word of God. But none of that is true. So why would you say, I'm part of that? Be objective. Don't be afraid to use your mind. Don't be afraid to look at it and say, why would I want to be part of this group? Okay, so my parents were good people. Doesn't mean they were right about everything. Doesn't mean they were right about the biggest existential questions. Doesn't mean they were right to be part of a group, in the case of Catholicism, for example, where the leaders were engaged in a mass child fucking scandal. No, use your mind. Leave the religion. You don't need the religion. But most importantly, the religion isn't true. And sometimes it leads to stuff like this. And they argue that you can't disagree with them because they're rules are coming from God, so you can't tell me that I can't force women not to drive because God says I can do that. No, God doesn't say that. You think God is saying that, but that your religious belief should have no effect whatsoever on how we create secular laws in any kind of rational society. All right, I'm running out of time here. I'm going to skip ahead and try to do this one real quick. See if I can get in two more in my short time span here. Gemma Whale is a woman in Birmingham. Gemma Whale is a woman in Birmingham, England, and she's heading to jail for having loud sex. According to The Guardian, she'll be there for 2 weeks. They say, quote, Gemma became subject to an antisocial behavior order, which is a really weird-sounding thing, forbidding her from bothering her neighbors after they complained that she'd been making a racket in her apartment. So this happened before the sex incident, and that order came after she had loud fights with her boyfriend. Her neighbors called the cops, the cops showed up, and they gave her this, you know, antisocial behavior order where she's now prohibited from playing loud music and shouting and swearing and making banging noises or stomping or slamming doors. So it's a little weird. I don't know if we have something that's the equivalent of that here in the U.S. I don't know. It might be a little bit too big government-y for me. Doesn't mean you can't get mad at your neighbor if your neighbor's being a douche, but have some sort of, like, extra security they're under because you don't like them. I don't know. Maybe it goes a little bit too far, but I digress from that because then the sex incident happened. They say, quote, neighbors reported that Gemma had very loud sex early in the morning, thus waking them up and violating the order. So here's the thing, man. Like, I hear you if you're the neighbor. I was on your fucking side for most of the story here. I mean, imagine being woken up super early because your neighbor's, like, having obnoxious, super loud sex, and all you want to do is sleep. You only got 4 hours of sleep, and they're just being super selfish in what they're doing. It's like, yeah, I get it. That would piss me off to no end, and I'd probably say something to them, right? I don't know what I'd do, but I'd try to find some kind of way where I can mitigate shit like that happening again. But then when you know that they have this order on them already and you call the cops, now she's going to jail for 2 weeks because she had loud sex. No, now you're the bad guy. Now you're the bad guy. Because loud sex, really? You go to jail for having loud sex? No, if you have loud sex, you know what you are? You're an asshole. If you have loud sex and you wake your neighbors, you don't give a fuck about who can hear it. You're just an asshole. Are you a criminal? I'd say no. If anything, now I'm more against the people who called the cops, because if anything, they were mad that she was being super selfish, but now you're being selfish because you're okay with this woman being put in jail for 2 weeks because she fucked a little loud. Come on, man. That goes too far. You know, and if you really want to be creepy, you could have woken up to the noise and maybe had some sex of your own because it got you in the mood. I'm just giving some suggestions here, though. You don't need to take them seriously. Okay, final story of the day. The Associated Press is reporting on a story coming out of Canada. A judge there really swung a sledgehammer at tobacco companies. They say, quote, a court has awarded more than $12 billion to Quebec smokers in a case that pitted them against three giant tobacco companies. The case is believed to be the biggest class action lawsuit ever seen in Canada. Superior Court Justice Brian Reardon said in his decision released late Monday that by choosing not to inform health authorities or the public directly of what they knew, the companies chose profits over the health of their customers. So the tobacco companies have to pay $800 million in the first 60 days, regardless of an appeal. So they have to pay no matter what that first part. The plaintiffs were people who were seriously ill from smoking or people who said they just couldn't quit. Listen to what the judge said. Quote, the companies earn billions of dollars at the expense of the lungs, the throats, and the general well-being of their customers. If the companies are allowed to walk away unscathed now, what would be the message to other industries that today or tomorrow find themselves in a similar moral conflict? So the industry argued that people knew about the risks of smoking and that the products were sold legally with federal government approval and with strict regulation. So JTI McDonald, which is one of the tobacco companies, said, quote, Canadians have been well aware of the health risks since the 1950s, and health warnings have been on packages for more than 40 years. All right, so where do I fall on this? I might surprise you guys a little bit here, but I'm 100% with the tobacco companies. Look, it's a different story if there weren't warnings on the label. In Canada, they even have the pictures of, like, lung disease and stuff on the labels. If those things weren't on and there wasn't actual information about tobacco out there, then I side with the people who got sick off a product that they didn't know they were going to get sick off of. In this case, you knew. You had the information. You had the warning on the packages. You had the pictures on the packages of lung disease. Everybody knows cigarettes cause cancer and cause problems in today's day and age. So for you to get sick off a product that you knew would get you sick, and then you sue for millions of dollars or billions of dollars, no, because what's next? What are you going to do? I want to sue the alcohol company because I got drunk and I was sick and I needed to go to the hospital for it. You knew what alcohol was going to do to you when you drank in excess. You know, hey, I smoked too much weed and I was too high and I crashed while I was driving. Now I want to sue one of the legal weed companies in Colorado. No, you can't do that either. You knew the risks and you shouldn't have gone behind the wheel. I mean, at some point, once you have perfect information, then the society should be free and you should, you know, accept the consequences of your actions. If you say, let's have a free society, and then you make a bad decision, and then you sue the company that provided you with the thing that you made the bad decision with, the problem isn't the company. The problem is you. Yes, the products can be bad for you, but we live in a free society. If somebody eats too much McDonald's, can they sue McDonald's and say, I'm too fat, give me $5 million? Fuck that. I feel bad for you that you're fat, right? And I feel bad that McDonald's does shit to their food, which makes it less healthy. That's not a good thing. You could do some basic regulation there to try to make it maybe slightly healthier. But we're going to live in a world where some foods are unhealthy. And guess what? That doesn't mean that if you eat too much of it, you get to sue them and take millions of dollars from them or billions of dollars from them. After you have perfect information, then it's all about personal responsibility. If they're withholding information, that's a different story. And you're getting sick when you don't know the product can get you sick. That's a different story. Then I'm on your side. But if we're talking about a situation like we see here, well, no, I'm not on your side because you had perfect information and you made a bad decision. You have to live with the consequences of that. That's not the fault of the tobacco company.